This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
If you could change your degree or diploma, what would you do instead? That is the question we're asking on Enterprise Biz Bytes today with Frida and Arvin. We have a bunch of messages. We'll get to Instagram first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. JDPJ, I don't know if it's our office, JD. She says psychology, Split Cure said e-learning so that I could do business at the same time. Mm-hmm. Chris Harris said strategic management. Razu Tosop said took applied biology and management, would probably add computer science, not change. Okay.
Interesting.
Sarayu03 said different course.
Over on Twitter, we have Girl with Good Taste, who says performing arts, nice. Constantly Days says, if I can give change, maybe in culinary arts, as nowadays there is more advantages to learn trade. After number of experiences, maybe take certificate in business. Mm. And Daniel Pubalin says, I would take up certification courses instead, like CompTIA A+ and OSCP, which is Offensive Security Certified Pentester. The courses are so.
I think it's just an ethical hacker or cybersecurity kind of thing. I don't know.
He has a Mr. Robot profile, so maybe that's why. But interesting.
Okay, back on WhatsApp here. 30793079. I remember most of my friends studied biotech as a degree, since the previous government was encouraged to do biotech at that time. Mm-hmm. Until now, it's still not that big. Right. My friends have moved to another industry unrelated to biotech. Apparently now the focus is on data science. I guess it is a point. But I think when you look at biotech or data science, it's a course that you don't have to apply to just Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Right. It is going to be versatile enough around the world. Right. If you're going to be specific about that. I think always seriously, just do what you enjoy. Then we've got from Maggie here. Maggie Best, definitely more effort in tackling my maths and pay more attention during chemistry classes. Mm-hmm. Might just be a qualified dietitian now. Then probably for those of my friends who like to ask for my advice about diets, could trust my recommendation without reservation. Nini said here, if I could turn back the clock, I'd take up computer science engineering, but it's always the case, right? Discontentment.
Interesting. Keep those messages coming in. 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp or find us on Instagram and Twitter at BFM Radio. And while we wait, customer engagement. Three ways that we can get more customer engagement.
Right. This is written by Leonie Brown for SAP came out in Fast Company. And so three ways user stories and personas lead to deeper engagement. And that's so true, right? And I'm reading this and seeing references to what's happening in the marketing space. Some companies always rely just on broad demographic profiles, while others segment their customers based on specific factors such as income, education, and product usage. So it didn't go any more deeper than that. So one of the things here, they said three ways they could help was, one is to understand their key decision criteria. Every company knows its value proposition. They know what makes their product service special, as well as where they lag behind competitive offerings. Their understanding is likely much more logical and better informed than that of their best customers. But they're not making the purchase decision, their customers are. So it's imperative to understand how they see your product in the broader field of potential choices. Example here, when one pharmaceutical company went to market with a new product that promised greater effectiveness than the market leader, it was surprised no one not to be winning more converts. A customer research provided an answer. Customers cared more about side effects than improved efficacy. So after a marketing shift to reflect this insight, more customers began to make the switch. Hmm. This reminds me of the media pitches that we get in.
Yeah.
So the media pitches that we get in talking about how wonderful the product is and everything is like, I'm sure it is, right? But how does it apply to our listeners? I don't want to think for you why this product is so good, right? It could be, say, this would be great for this particular industry because it will be able to reduce whatever, right? Mm. The media pitch, right? And so you have to understand that when you send a pitch to us, right, the story has to be not how wonderful you are, but how this could be of benefit to your end target audience, right? So, and treat us like your target audience. If it doesn't appeal to me, right, then it just sounds like an ad. People before products, right? Mm. So a simple thing like that, understand your key decision criteria, what it would benefit it's actually just one-on-one, right? Just what would benefit, right? Another one is to accommodate emotion. So emotional experience plays a huge role in customer sentiment. When a company gains insight into emotions that key customers are likely to experience at critical points along the customer journey, say a business class airline customer worrying about whether a delayed or cancelled flight will get them to your destination in time, they can take steps to address emotional concerns, anxiety or frustration in this case, along with the logistical ones. Companies that master this skill often reap brand ambassadors as a result when a service intervention turns initial disappointment into relief and satisfaction. It's a recipe for loyalty and promotion. So, you know, it's, again, you know, when you do that, because, you know, it's... sooner or later, when you're on a flight, there's going to be a delay, there's going to be that, right? And there's no, like, if you, that concern, like, what if you're going to another meeting? What are you trying to catch another flight, right? What are you doing to appease that person? Mm-hmm. Now, apart from accommodation, what else will make sure that your connecting flights will take care of it? That sort of thing. So I think also sometimes we've gotten used to it when we fly around this region with some of these airlines. We always get delay and not so much of an apology even.
Yeah, because it's normalized.
Which is so sad.
It's sad,
right? You know, and it annoys me. But when you talk about this emotional concerns, right, I would choose a particular airline, even depending on which airport it lands in. Mm-hmm. If I don't like that particular airport, one of two, three in the KL city, right, I would avoid that airline just because I don't want to go to that airport.
Mm. So and that's I'm sure a lot of other customers think that way as well. Like, they wouldn't want to, they would pick and choose the airports that they wanted to be in because it's part of the whole airline experience.
Whole journey,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. I'm going to Singapore soon, and just because and we're going there for the same reason. But just because I don't like the airport experience and I don't like certain kinds of experiences, I decided to travel by road. I'm just gonna drive there,
right?
Just to avoid that experience that's tied to the airport itself.
So I have managed to avoid that whole experience by choosing an airline that doesn't go
exactly
to that airport.
Yeah.
I think we should play a song for the reason we're going to Singapore later. Anyway, another one is appreciate edge cases. So once you've identified a few core user stories or personas, there's a temptation to write out customers that don't fit these profiles. So these customers may not be worth building major initiatives around, but don't take your eye off them. Instead, watch for patterns emerge, because there's a chance that a new and valuable customer segment may emerge that was completely off your radar when you went through the customer narrative exercise. For example, all line manufacturers, this is right from the USCC, Filson, and of course Red Wing Shoes, would have missed an enormous opportunity if they ignored the recent handcrafted Americana boom among young urbanites and focused exclusively on their traditional hiking and work boot customers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, there's a new couple, so you don't know what's going to happen. I think also, like, you know, when in the early days we used to just define, because you're in your 20s, your 30s, you must be having children right now, you do your marketing that way. People don't realize, I mean, like, the realization that you have to think of life stages, right? And you shouldn't go into age persona because people are having children later. So they might be having children after 35. Mm-hmm. But think of that as well, and think of a different marketing strategy. I think, like, even when we started BFM years ago, the idea was to appeal to Gen Xers because they would be CEOs, right? And they would be, you know, those that would be listening to us 10 years ago would have been CEOs
at that time,
right? And so they would appeal to us, and that was, and it also reflects in our music, that sort of thing. But we realized also, because it is a station that focuses on entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs don't come in sizes and packages and all that, they come in all ages, right? So then you've got to realize that you've got to change your messaging in such a way that it appeals to anybody who wants to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And it could be women, entrepreneurs, could be all these things. So you got to think of your messaging a little differently, because it's change, right? And there are opportunities within these different segments.
Also, the age for entrepreneurs are getting younger. We've seen, talked about this, we've spoken about this, that how people in their, like, early 20s, it keeps getting lower and lower.
Mm.
So like you said, if we keep marketing to the people who are maybe in the C-suites,
right,
or in a certain bracket at one point in time, like, let's say the late 2000s, in about 20 years, or even less than that, in about maybe 15 years, that age bracket will dynamically change.
Right.
Because
And should we look at a person in terms of age, or should we look in terms of their psychographics, right? Also, a lot of people have decided to do their business in their 40s.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not then, you know, you don't want to classify people by age, but you want to classify people, you know, by their areas of interest. But someone, I guess, who starts their business in their 20s and someone who starts their business in their 40s have different concerns.
Mm-hmm.
20s, like, oh, well, you know, if it doesn't work, I can always get a job. In the 40s, they probably have a lot more vested interest because probably have kids going to school, probably have, you know, mortgages to look into. So all these things come into play.
Also, the soft skills thing. If you look at the three points that are given, none of them are actually stuff that you would learn on like an academic level.
Right.
It's more soft skills. It's more things that you can't actually teach in like school or through a textbook. It's stuff that you have to do while mixing with other people, or you learn like the co-skill kind of thing, or co-learning. It's by mixing other people, see how they talk and they market themselves to their customers, and then maybe like absorb those skills and implement it in your own company.
Right. But so, to be smarter about these things, but I guess if you were to market a car, to me, it's quite simple. Is it red?
Just the color?
Yeah.
We are actually asking you about, if you could change your degree or diploma, what would you do instead? Let us know. Get in touch with us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at BFM Radio. We will come back with a story about Airbnb, but in the meantime, some music and some messages on Enterprise BizBytes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.